Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio. We're coming to you live from Washington, D.C. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum. And like I said, we're coming to you live from here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show. And after we go to one of our paid sponsors, we will be right back with tonight's show, giving our listeners a chance to call in. And like I said, we will welcome them to the show. So be right back in just a second. Like I said, we're going to deal with one of our sponsors. All right. Until we can get our sponsors to respond to our ad, we'll just continue with the introduction of tonight's show. Of course, we are going to our title this evening is Business Identification and Network Marketing. But again, as you know, it's an open mic. So when we have open mics, we welcome whatever title you would like to present. So it doesn't necessarily have to be our topic of business identification and network marketing. It can be whatever you want to present because, again, it's open mic. So with that said, we will get started with our tonight's show, and I can also tell you we have loads of information that we want to share. I'm really a sort of delaying because my co-host hasn't come on yet. And I don't know, normally he's right on time because he has an agenda that we both would love to share with our audience. And so as soon as he comes on, we will share that information with you. But in the meantime, we will go ahead and present our show, and like I said, giving our callers time enough to call in. So we'll just take our time and let everybody get close a call in, and I don't want to get started too soon and where somebody say, well, I missed this and I missed that, or giving everybody a chance. So we would sort of exaggerate here just for a minute or two, giving, again, our callers a chance to call in, and most of all, giving my co-host a chance to call in giving him a chance to call in, and like I said, he has a special agenda that we want to share with everyone. So our lines are still alight, being lit up. So again, we thank all of our listeners for joining in, and yes, we will all get started here, and hopefully we will have a nice lively business discussion. Brothers and sisters, we need to have these communication channels. That's one of the reasons why we are overlooked, even though we're some of the biggest taxpayers, the highest taxpayers in the country. But when it comes to the business of the country, seems like we're just totally overlooked and totally taken for granted. And so, and that's because, of course, we don't have communications ways. We can't communicate. and complaint with each other as to where our voice can be one powerful voice when those who are in power, such as the White House and the two other houses, the Congress and the House of Representatives, and of course all the governors and county governors, we all want to be able to present one powerful voice, but in order to do that, we have channels as to where we can communicate and not being just told what's going on in our country. We're going to have a bigger input, and that's what we are definitely going to be working on. I can tell you a starting right now. Look like we have my co-host on. Let me just sort of plug him in. And I think we will just about get started again. Brother Aziz, are you with us?
Yes. Greetings, audience, and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Okay, well, alaikum salam, and we got a pretty nice audience. We'll be opening the mics up in just a few moments. Looking forward to participation, but in the meantime, we will do our few announcements, and we will look forward to a very powerful show. Brother Aziz, I am not going to generalize on very much because I know you have some powerful information to share, and I'll just open it up by saying that on November the 14th, Brother Aziz will be give you a direct specifics, but the first time that I know anything about, and I've been a business a director in our community for quite some time, but the federal government, Joe Biden and Brother Aziz will be reading the specifics, particulars, in just a few moments. But Joe Biden is inviting financial stimulations to our community. And he's specifically going through American Muslims. And when I say American Muslims, we're not just talking about African Americans. We're talking about American Muslims all over this country. So it's going to be a large delegation at this conference, which is going to be held at the Department of Commerce, the Business Department. And we have been invited. We have a personal invitation, and we are going to have 12 seats available to us. And since we're going to the Department of Commerce, this is where you ask for the amount of monies that you need allocated, whether it's non-profit or for-profit. And I know that we need, in order to put together the programs that we've been talking about for the last 8 years, in order to implement those programs, we know for a fact that we're going to need way over $100 million. So we're not going there talking about small money, but then too, from the invitations that we got, they're not suggesting that they're trying to give out small monies. But like I said, I won't give it away. I will let our brother read to us the information that we received. So without me saying any more and wasting any more time, because I think these 2 hours we have tonight is going to be fully impacted. But like I said, I am going to switch over to you, Brother Aziz. Welcome to the show. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you, Brother Bilal, and alaykum salam. And what I wanted to share with our listening audience tonight is, as you have stated, the invitation from President Joe Biden and United States Department of Commerce. And what we have the invitation is from a certain part of the Commerce Department. It's the Commerce Department on the Commerce Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. And this is a meeting where they're having a National Muslim America Leadership convening. And it's going to be Tuesday, November the 14th, 2023. And the objectives of, we're going to talk about the objectives of this convening of the leaders. The objective, the Commerce Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships is in partnership with the Department of Defense. Small Office Business Programs and Engage will host the National Muslim American Leaders Convening with business leaders and key Muslim American stakeholders across the United States at the U.S. Department of Commerce. The focus will be on very similar, and if not the same thing, that New Africa Business Association, led by Brother Bilal and myself, Brother Aziz. The main focus on this will be based on networking, learning, and collaboration. The convening will aim to establish and grow with partnerships with Muslim American business leaders, entrepreneurs, and communities across the U.S. As we continue to support their work and to provide a whole commerce and a whole of government resources to them via regional stakeholders, working groups, initiative. The goal of the summit is to, number one, which we've not had this before that we know of, is to empower the Muslim American-based business, the Muslim American business faith community by providing Muslim American business leaders, entrepreneurs, and community organizers the opportunity to engage face-to-face with Biden administration officials. We're talking about high-up officials, not just regular officials, high-up, because this is important to the Biden administration. We're going to be face-to-face with Biden administration officials, bureau leadership from the Department of Commerce, and federal interagency partners to discuss their most pressing concerns. So all of a sudden, our government has a real attention that they want to put on focus on the Muslim American community as well as faith-based partnerships with our community. Also, they want to include and provide a platform for our success, and that's by creating a platform for cooperation, again, networking, and knowledge exchange among the stakeholders, and we would be the stakeholders, different Muslim American groups or faith-based communities in our community that have different programs that they want to implement in the community. And here's an opportunity to see where we can get the kind of funding and help we need to implement these different programs that we want to have. And third of all, the impact on our community. They want us to have an impact on our communities, whatever it is the business that we have, such as the New Africa Black Belt Business Wall Street Business Association. We're about networking and marketing African-American businesses and also promoting the communication between our not only our business communities, but the community themselves. And this is what this convening of the leadership will also do, and the Department of Commerce is offering the impact on our communities by they will facilitate us with technical assistance. They will facilitate us with grants and federal procurement opportunities. And if our listeners don't know federal procurement opportunities, and that is if you have different services or products in particular that you want to offer to the government, they're going to give you an opportunity, something similar to something that brothers and sisters, African Americans and engineers want to get contracts with the government starting out. I forget what the name of they call these guys, but now you remember what they call them, not Section 8 of. It's a government contractor that when you're first starting out getting a piece of the rock, but you don't get it all. But anyway, they're going to facilitate the technical help that we need, grants, federal procurement opportunities, and community development toolkits for our Muslim American community. And these community development toolkits is information, tools, things that you need, information programs that you need, resources that you need to, or that we would need to implement our program or get our programs established in the community. Also, the key themes also will be include information on business development, entrepreneurship, patent and trademarks, access to data and innovation. Also, anti-hate resources, programs that we may have, that you may have, that can facilitate the community, i.e. American public, in understanding the lifestyle of the Muslim community, and that, you know, Muslim is a lifestyle. It's not just it's not a religion. It's the way we live, a lifestyle, and to let people understand more about what Al-Islam is about. We know what Christians are about, and we know when we see people that say they're Christians, we're not following the guidelines that they have. We clearly can see that when they're not following Christian guidelines, no matter how they're interpreted, especially if we all read the same thing. Brother, I'm getting a call from Dr. Parker Bilal. Can you
go right ahead? I'll take it from here, and you come on back when you and brothers.
All right.
Leaving off what Aziz was just saying, this was sent to prominent leaders all over this country, and just let me give you some of those prominent leaders that they're talking about. They're talking about, of course, Muslim American business leaders. That's where we come in. And even though, let me just say this. I don't know why Joe Biden sent this to the American Muslims Business Association, but I can't say I'm not glad that he didn't. Because as our brothers and sisters, whether you're Muslim or Christians, you know, when when it comes to seriousness and ready to negotiate, looking you dead in the eye, and
got that taken care of, Bilal. He'll be calling on in a minute.
And I must come right back to you, Brother Aziz. My point is this, brothers and sisters, when Brother Aziz was saying, and I am saying, it was sent to our communities, and when it comes to those prominent folks who will be there, like I said, it says here the American Muslims business leaders. As far as now, there are many other Muslim business leaders that will be there. But as far as African-American representation, whether you're Muslim or whether you're Christians, we as African-Americans, we speak for our communities. And our community consists of Muslims and Christians. It always have. Our homes consist of Muslims and Christians. We cannot separate ourselves from each other, and we don't want to. So, again, when we go there, we're going there representing our communities, and when we advocate for monies, we're advocating for all of our communities. So, and like I said, we're not talking anything small here. This is large. If they can send billions of dollars to shoot off in war, certainly they can send $1 billion to our communities. $1 billion is not asking very much, but $1 billion can set most of our communities and give most of our communities the start that we need to start being very serious about our business community. So with that said, Brother Aziz, I'm going to turn it right back to you, but I wanted our Christian and brothers to know we are working for our communities. Brother Aziz.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Brother Bilal. Absolutely. And I wanted to bring it up again that the key themes in this will include business development, information on business development, entrepreneurship, patents and trademarks, access to data and innovation, and anti-hate resources, and much more. And it's important, again, as I was saying, that we, the groups of us out there that are dealing with getting a greater understanding of Al-Islam to the communities out there, this is an opportunity for you to present yourselves at this convening and talk to some of the different representatives that the Department of Commerce have invited. And among our distinguished guests, the keynote speakers will be high-level principals from the Biden administration, as I mentioned before. And we'll have panelists, prominent Muslim business leaders, policymakers, elected officials, and community advocates from across the country. But the representatives that will be there for the Department of Commerce initiatives and opportunities, the invited people or bureaus will be coming from the U.S. Census Bureau, the Economic Development Administration, the International Trade Administration, Minority Business Development, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I'm sure some of our people will definitely be interested in dealing with that. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. That has a lot to do in connection with FEMA and the weather, you know, the extreme weather that we may be encountering with the climate change and the different programs that they have to offer, as well as the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. That is something that is vital to us getting information out there in the community as well as all around the country. And also the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for us that, have patents or ideas that you want to make sure that you're able to get them registered and patent, trade, put in your name where you'll be protected and you can go about and get your idea or product on out there. Also, the interagency participation will also be from the USDA, the SBA, the Treasury Department, Education, and the National Securities Commission. And the panels will consist of Commerce Bureau leaders, interagency speakers, and they will conduct the discussions on business expansion, innovation, workforce development, community engagement, and the business sector's role in driving social change. Now, this convening that we're going to have is not going to be an all-day affair. The National Muslim Business Leaders Entrepreneur Summit And the location will be at the Department of Commerce Auditorium. And it'll start at 9:30 a.m. and it will end at 3:30 p.m. And the events will include, from 9:30, we'll have the networking and movement to the auditorium where the event will start taking place. We'll have a welcome video, and then we'll have some keynote speakers, a morning panel, then we'll have Muslim leadership listening session, a lunch break, a breakout section, and a lot of people wonder, what is a breakout session? Well, a breakout session will be conducted to focus on certain areas, such as the Department of Commerce grant opportunities and resources. Also, Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure bill opportunities. Another one would be community engagement and the most pressing issues on the ground at the time, and much more. But I'm sure a lot of us will be interested in the Department of Commerce grant opportunities and resources. And they have a number of different agencies that's working with them in that area, as well as the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure bill opportunities. And we have four different government agencies working with us on that. So these are some of the things that are going to be taking place among the networking, among the different panelists and participants that we have there. It's going to be approximately, they say, 150 attendees there, local and national Muslim American businessmen, community leaders, national partners, and commerce and interagency staff. It's going to be all of us. That's who's going to make up the 150. So, you know, we're going to have a number of people from the Department of Commerce, a number of people, as I read off, from some different government agencies that's going to be there. And we're all going to be participating in this networking and seeing what the government has to offer for us, because they're interested in us making an impact in the community overall, not just the Muslim community, but the African-American community. Even though it says that it's a national Muslim leaders convening conference, but it's for all of us, African-American brothers and sisters. We want that to be clear. Christians, Muslims, whatever faith that is, African-Americans, we're not just limiting our relationships to one, and that's what we're talking about, networking, being able to work together on whatever it is, business, whatever it may be. So that's somewhat of a start of some of the opportunities that are going to be there. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Brother Bilal.
Brother Aziz.
Yeah, that's the schedule that's going to be going down. Do we want to, yes, and if you want to know more about this information, we'll have it on our website where you can get in. But Brother Bilal will tell you that in order to, if you are a business person.
Give them our email. If they have anyone want to send us an email, go ahead, Brother Aziz, the telephone number. We'll be glad to answer any questions after the show or anytime they want to call us before the event on the 14th. And I will go ahead, and that email, of course, is nabassc@gmail.com. nabassc@gmail.com. We'll be glad to, and our telephone numbers, of course, is 301-234-9090. 202-903-7278, 202-288-5660. And when we open up our mics here in a few moments, we will, you can, we'll share that information with you again. Just want to let you brothers know when Brother Aziz was talking about all the different government agencies that's going to be there, we try to align our expertise. In other words, those who are in the field, such as when he talked about FEMA, well, of course, our doctor, Sister Aisha, who has been training us over a year or so, she is going to be, of course, right there. And, of course, we're talking about the monies that she would need in order to really start protecting our communities and being able to put out the training that our communities really need. That's what I'm saying. We're not looking for, this is not a small business conversation. As far as I am concerned, this probably might be the biggest business conversation ever presented to the government. If not, then we haven't done our job. But like I said, we're lining up professionals. We only have 10 invitations. We only have 10 seats. But we're going to try to make those 10 seats just as professional as we possibly can. And so, representatives like Sister Aisha, we have investment bankers. Investment bankers who are millionaires, who's already millionaires, but they're taking their expertise with us, so we will be able to address the federal government and whatever agency we would have to address very professionally and very successfully. When we talk about patents and trades, we're going to be taking our estate lawyers, who has helped to start the New Africa Business Association, a sister that specializes in estate planning. Many of you heard her. She's come on before, and she's given us vital information that would cost, and she'll be back doing it in the future, but she will be in attendance. We will have CPAs. We will have a financial planner such as myself, and we will have different professionals to present to the government representing our communities. And like I said, sent to... many, many organizations throughout the country, but I've already spoken directly with the brother who's is the director with the Department of Commerce, worked directly for the president. I spoke with him directly, and he is very excited because they're not used to having African Americans participating in such large events. But the president asked for this. He asked for us. And to have us showing up, and we've already sent in our bios on who we are, they have called and they're just so impressed with what we as an African American community and our professional, we're ready to present ourselves and represent you, but represent us all because we're going there for money. So we're going to open our mics up at this time and give you a chance to start your participation. I know, like I said, we got all types of programs we like to present, but right now, this is the most important of all. And so whatever you heard thus far, but just before I open the mics, I have to give recognition to one of our other directors who is a part of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, and that is Sister Aisha. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum and good evening to everyone. Yes, I am.
Waalaikum assalam.
Any comments you'd like to make before we open the mics up to our guests?
Well, my comments it's pretty much reiterating what Brother Aziz has said and how excited we are to bring this information to the community. We're in a position, I guess, in the last 8 months or so, where we are getting a lot of information, and as people in government on both the national level as well as the regional level, know that we are consistent every Wednesday night getting the word out to the people. They now are coming to us with the word from their operation, and so we can get it out to the people. And this is why we need the people to start participating by tuning in on Wednesday, because all of us, all three of us and some of the other directors, we have worked very hard to get our name out there in front of these officials and these national and regional officials, that we're the people that can get the information out to. We're the group that can get the information out to the people. And so we want you all to start participating, because there's a lot going on now. And the meeting on the 14th, we have 10 slots. All of them have not been taken. And, of course, we want to have all of them taken by the time of this meeting in D.C. Also, once those are taken, we mentioned some time ago that FEMA has divided the country into regions. It's no longer the southeast, northeast, northwest, and so forth. There are 10 regions that the country has been divided into as far as the climate change initiative. And so also on November the 14th and the 15th, there is Region 4. Region 4 will have a regional meeting in North Carolina on that same day, on the 14th and the 15th. Now, this is regional. What we are talking about in D.C. is national. So it's important that if you can make the one in D.C., do so. That's national. If you cannot make the one in D.C., consider the regional meeting that's also going to take place on the 14th and 15th in North Carolina. Now, Region 4 consists of these states: North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, and Kentucky. So if we have any listeners from those states, your region is going to have a meeting on the 14th and 15th of November, and you need to be there, because they're going to talk about funds, just like at the state, at the national level. So please, there's so much that we want our community to start participating in, but if you don't show up, we won't know what's going on. Now, we here, as your host, we're showing up. We're going to be there by the grace of God. They know we're going to be there. And we would like for you all to be there as well. None of this costs anything. You go to D.C. for free. The meeting in North Carolina is free. Now, we missed the deadline for you to be able to get supplements on your travel and your hotel. But, however, if you can come, come. And let us know that you're going to show up at the region or at the national. So this is what we want from the community. We'll work hard getting the information and getting our name out there so we can be a contact for resources for our people. But if you all don't show up and don't participate, what good does it do? So those are my comments. And so let us hear, you have, get some feedback from you on the national convening that's going to take place on November the 14th. So thank you, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz. Those are my comments so far.
And Sister
thank
Aisha,
you. Thank you.
Just to go, let everyone know that that they need to register. They need to register, and we business folks that are coming to D.C. are considered coming to D.C. You need to register with you, and the information that they would have to send you in order to get to fulfill. I think we got about 4, maybe 5 more seats left. And but please, if you're not coming, don't register to come, although we still would love for you to send your bio about
yes.
your business, what have you. But if you're mm-hmm. going to let the sister know, because we're going to be sending in our registrations no later than Monday afternoon.
That's correct.
Share that information, if you would, before we open our mics.
Yes. If you're going to go to the meeting in D.C., and like Brother Bilal said, we only have a few slots left, please send your bio to Aisha, A-I-S-H-A, at Summiter, Summiter, Inc., I-N-C, .com. That's Aisha, A-I-S-H-A, at Summiter, Summiter, Inc., I-N-C, .com. And we will make sure that your bio is in the hands of these national officials. So, and you will also be registered. We will make sure that your name is on the list, so you will have entree to the meeting itself. And that's very important, because they need your name. They need your information, because you're going into a federal meeting place. So if you cannot remember my email, my direct email, send it to the email for the radio station, Black Belt Wall Street. You know that's on the information that you receive. And Brother Bilal will forward it to me. But we need this immediately. We need this no later than Monday at the latest.
Yes.
If you are in Region 4, and I read the states, if you are in Region 4 and you want to attend the meeting in Durham, North Carolina, on the 14th and 15th of November, please send me an email, because you have to register for that. There's no fee. You would just have to fill out a simple 3-line registration. But you've got to step up to the plate in order for us to be recognized. So go ahead, Brother Bilal. We'll talk a little bit more later.
Just before I go to the audience, I need to give one. Is Dr. Parker, or anyone from 51090, are you with us?
I am.
Dr. Parker, my goodness, good evening. How are you? Please introduce yourself. And I'm glad because I know you and Sister Aisha have been missing each other, but we want to take a few moments and let everybody know who you are. That's what we want to do.
I'm Reginald Parker. I've been in tutelage of Brother Bynum for probably 10 years. He's a great brother, and what I've been focused on for that period of time is developing climate resiliency and renewable energy solutions for low-income and disadvantaged communities. And when I say disadvantaged, I should just as well say underserved. When you look at our communities, black and brown communities, specifically black communities, regardless of median income, our solar penetration rate doesn't pop more than 5%. And it's not because we don't want that type of energy. They just don't sell it to us. And so I am working real hard with a coalition of folks and being a part of the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure legislation to bring technology, programs, projects, and an ecosystem to our communities, HBCUs, faith-based organizations, public housing and multifamily facilities and the like, along with this coalition of folks, so that we can spur not only community empowerment, but economic development, environmental justice, workforce development to our communities. So, there's a lot that goes along with that, but it took a long while developing relationships, sourcing the capital, and developing the technologies. And so we're looking forward to pulling all of that together in 2024 for everyone's mutual benefit. So that's who I am. That's what I'm doing. And thank you, Brother Bynum, for the space to share.
Thank you so much. And brothers and sisters, this is an example of the professionals that will be representing you at the Department of Commerce. And I want to I would get in big trouble if I didn't go to our director out there in Oklahoma City. Sister Williams, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Good evening, brothers and sisters, and assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. We
welcome.
Yes, sir. I'm listening to the show, and I'm surely enjoying everything that I am hearing. And another, I really want to congratulate you, brothers. I know over the years sometimes, as they say, we hit a slump, in writing, you hit a slump or what have you. But, you've talked it out, you've worked it out, and you've remained steady and you've remained on available here to the community. And when I say community, I'm not just speaking of your community right there. I'm talking about your community across the diaspora, your communities as you're reaching international markets now. This is growth. And I just want to commend you and congratulate you guys on what you're doing and what you're providing to all of us. We truly appreciate you. But, when we, some time ago, we used to talk about, and Brother Bilal, I think you're the one who brought this to light in terms of circling our wagons and tightening up our resources. And, you know, no matter from where you are, you just start circling. And then the tighter it gets, the more of the inner circle we become. Because, you know, it was Malcolm and the man who was on the movie who said you have to look in between everything that they tell you, just basically do the opposite. So first of all, I want to congratulate you and you guys on going to the Department of Commerce, and please get all the information for those of us who are not readily available, those of us who are way out here in the Region 6s and 7s and different states like that, who just can't get into the car or get a ticket and come to D.C. or North Carolina right away. But it's good to know we have representation, and that's what we need. But what we also need, to know that these people who have these funds available, and hopefully, inshallah, will be able to get as much and as many and as much information as we can absorb. But don't go in thinking that they're your friends and shaking hands and skinning and grinning. Get what we can get. Get back to your wagons and let's start circling. Because, honey, they're not playing with us out here. They got $105 billion for Ukraine and Israel and $0 for reparations. So, yes, let's go in there. Let's do what we have to do. Submit proposals, requests, RFPs, whatever we need to do. And with Zoom and all this type thing, we can reach out to one another no matter where we are. So if you need assistance and I can help with a line or two or a quirk, I got plenty of those, or two, let me know. I'll be happy to help. But at the same time, let's get in there, be our professional selves, like Brother Bilal was saying a few minutes ago, get our information for our communities and get up out of there. Because we must, it's not need, it's, well, want or anything like, we need, we must start circling and tightening up our own communities. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, we would, we want to, brothers and sisters, all of our directors, we want to congratulate a new director. We have a new director in Delaware. He was appointed as a director just today. And I'm going to let him come on and give us the greetings and give him a few words that he would like to say. And we will indeed open our mics. We're here until 9 o'clock, brothers and sisters, so we have plenty of time to communicate with each other, but the directors, they're the ones who make things happen with our organization. And those of you who are in other states, we need directors in every state. From here to California, we need directors. So, I, like I said, want to introduce for the first time our brand new director, Brother Rashid. Brother Rashid, are you with us?
Yes, sir, Brother Bilal, I'm with you. Assalamu alaikum to you and to everyone listening. And as I stated to you before, just very humble to be a part of what you all are putting together. After listening to Sister Aisha, it inspired me even more with just everything that you guys have been talking about. And what, as I told you, Brother Bilal, what I've been envisioning, I've been talking about Black Wall Street since I was in Birmingham, Alabama. Recently relocated here to Smyrna, Delaware, been here nearly 2 years now, and I'm just amazed with how Allah is putting everything together. I'm going to leave you guys with this. After listening to everything you said and you guys have been talking about, it made me think of a poem that I had written years ago. I'm a self-published author of a book called Poetry in Motion. And on page 9, I think it's ideal with what you guys are talking about. I have a poem that was titled The Answer, and it goes something like this. When purity becomes diluted, the waters and fountains of knowledge become polluted. As a humble man, I sit in the presence of anger, watching non-tolerant people create environments of danger. We must embrace as one humanity while we erase and replace ungodly insanity. Indeed, this will take 100% participation. That means partnering with those outside your congregation. I know these words will fall on many deaf ears while you focus on hocus-pocus media images designed to increase your fears. Many of you will look the other way because you don't care. Blind eyes will never see the tree or the fruit that it bears. When this life ends, our deeds will show our contribution. Some of us were part of the problem while others were part of the solution. The seeds that bleed our society are spreading like cancer. You've always had many questions, but now you've been given the answer. And I want to say what you guys are doing right now with New Africa Black Wall Street is the answer that our people have needed for a long time. The question is, are we going to act or are we going to continue to talk about it? And I see that everybody I'm listening to are a group of people who want to get things done. So I just want to say to everybody listening, let's all get involved. Let's all help one another. Let's go back to Al-Kubulan before it was called Africa. You know, in our motherland, we were taught everything was about the village, the collective people. Now we've gotten conditioned to think it's all about me, it's the individual. So I'm going to leave you guys with that and saying thank you for allowing me to be a part of something so great. And I pray, inshallah, as we say, God willing, that I represent it and represent you well. Peace be upon you, brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. Lincoln,
thank you. Thank you,
brothers and sisters, let's welcome our new director, Brother Rashid. Yes, Sister Aisha, go right ahead.
I wanted to say to Brother Rashid and to Dr. Parker, and you might have already mentioned this to them, that this radio conversation that we have every Wednesday night, it is not just confined to the United States. We have people consistently who listen in to this radio show from Zimbabwe, Canada, Russia, France, Tanzania, India, Kenya, Mozambique. South Africa, Ghana, Tunisia, Portugal, the UK, and Ireland. Now, they have been consistently listening to us every Wednesday night. So hopefully these are our friends. Even if they are not our friends, they want to know what we're doing, and we're important enough to somebody in the world to listen, to know what we're doing. So either way, it's all right with us. We are getting the word out, and we're going to continue to, by the grace of God, and be consistent. So when you come on the radio, realize that there are people in other parts of the world are listening to us. Whether they naturally appreciate what we are doing and want to model what we are doing in their communities, or whether they are just keeping tabs on what the African Americans are doing in America. Either way, they are hearing what we are all about. And so we just want to let Brother Rashid and Dr. Parker know that we are not just in the United States. And we are continuing to work to get our international audience larger and larger. And we have had some tremendous networking opportunity recently, and we're going to continue to see if we can work those channels. And we know that these people are listening because we look at our back panel that shows us who's tuned in. So we just wanted to bring that to your attention. I'm sorry, Brother Bilal. Go right ahead.
so glad you brought that up, Sister Aisha, because that is the truth. And any of you who wish to verify what the sister said, you just simply go on Blog Talk Radio. And when you bring us up, blogtalkradio.com, and when you bring us up, you will go to our statistics, and it will show you everything that Sister Aisha is talking about. And yes, she's absolutely right. Our biggest audience is online. It's not the call-in. It's online. We don't know. I mean, we have a huge following online.
Mm-hmm.
Brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, now, is Brother Sam Harris by any chance with us? Okay. And I mentioned him because he sent me an email, and he certainly wants to be at the Department of Commerce be with us, and we know that this brother is this man is a millionaire. He doesn't have his time is very short. He's from the time he wakes up, I work with this brother, and it's just no exaggeration, no playing around with him. He's all about professionalism. And, of course, making money. So with that said, anything that you brothers and sisters have heard so forth, any information that you need, our mics are open. Anyone who's listening to us now will be able to hear from you. So our mics are open, and we welcome your comments about anything you've said or anything you wish to bring up. Our mics are open.
Hey, Brother Bilal, this is Nadir Rashid again in
yes.
Delaware. Just wanted to ask, and maybe this will help the listeners as well. Brother Aziz reminded us that on November 14th, U.S. Department of Commerce at the auditorium would be dealing with business development, entrepreneurship, patents, and trademarks. I'm wondering for entrepreneurs who are not yet fully established, or businesses that are new, extremely new, not fully established, could you guys make them aware of, is this something that they can come to, or is this more for businesses that are more well established?
No. As far as on the 14th, like I said, we have 10 seats. That they're giving us. So far, we have about six of them. We're pretty sure are filled. So which means we have about four or five more that is available. So I was even considering you, but again, I'm not the one to consider. Everyone have to say I am coming or what have you. But no, we are looking forward to whoever comes first. And no, you don't have to be a who is who. No, you just have to be, like I said, it's a business invitation. And we would love to have someone who's in business or considering business, but I know that there is also, remember, New Africa Business Association, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street is an LLC. But New Africa Businesses, but Black Belt Wall Street is a non-profit. So we have an LLC that will be taken there for profit, and we will also be taking Black Belt Wall Street, which is a non-profit. So, again, either way, we are talking about development, whether it's profit-making business or developing our communities as to where we can bring about many, many initiatives, especially to do something about I'll start with the crime. And, and of course, there's going to be crime and discourse anytime you can't present nothing but poverty to a community. You can't expect anything. They know it's going to be crime. That's why they put the policemen in our communities, because they know that's where they're going to create the crime because of non-opportunities. So we're talking about opportunities, whether it's profit or non-profit. We're still looking to have large amounts of money. And I know, since me saying large amounts of money, fair amounts of money is being sent to our communities like it's being sent everywhere else but our communities. But no, you do not have to be a who is who. You just have to be one of us and willing to offer something to your communities, whether it's business or something else. Like Sister Aisha said, send us your bio, and we welcome your participation. And like I said, we have about 4 or 5 seats that are still open. I don't know. But no, you don't have to be a who is who. Please don't even think that. No, you do not have to be a who is who.
Inshallah. Thanks for that. And inshallah, put me down, Brother Bilal. Inshallah, I'll send my bio to Sister Aisha, inshallah, in the next couple of minutes or so.
Well, thank you, Brother Rashid. I'll certainly look forward to getting that bio. And, you know, and I want to congratulate you and commend you for stepping up for this extremely important initiative that's taking place.
Yes.
I'm assuming that you are a younger generation than some of us, and we need our young people to step up so we can expose them to a different hierarchy in government and in economics and in business that they are not now participating in. And so if you do not utilize or take advantage of the experience of those who have been around a long time, you're going to have to learn all of this stuff step by step. And in most of the cases, our younger people, are not able to do it because they don't have the basic introduction. So we're happy to know that you are stepping up. Learn as much as you can learn from there, and let us show you some of the ways. Because most of us, Dr. Parker and Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz and some of the other directors, we have gone through the trenches, and we knew we had to stay the course for your generation and for the next generations to come. So thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you one day soon.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I look forward to it as well. Thank you so much.
All right, brothers and sisters, like I said, our mics are open. Welcome your comments.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Brother Rashid also, this Brother Aziz, for that poem. That was just really, 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 really striking and moving. Man, it really got to me. It was really good, my brother. And I wanted to back Brother Bilal when he said it was open to everyone. And when they said in the entrepreneurs, and as an entrepreneur, one would want to come to see what is available or what is offered there for them. So that was a good question that the brother asked, as well as us giving an answer back to those that might be in question about that. That's what the entrepreneur, that when they said entrepreneurs are invited to this, and that is not only you offering something, but you know you're seeking to see what type of opportunities are there that you may be interested in. And this is something that we wanted to make aware to our listeners also. So thank you for letting me put that in.
Brother Aziz, let me make certain that we haven't missed this. Brother Uzmar, is he with us? Okay, I'd gotten a text from him earlier. He's being on. But anyway, our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your comments. All right, well, since we're at the silent moment, Sister Aisha, it's your show. I don't know if you had anything in particular or not. I had a tape that I got from, that I received, and I like it. It has a lot to do with what's happening over in the Middle East.
Okay, let us hear your tape. I only want to make a few comments. In reference to this this historical event that's taking place at the White House and the event that's taking place in North Carolina, I just want to remind our listening audience that this is U.S. infrastructure investment, and this is a historic surge of federal funding that's available for the groups who can go after the funding, okay? And the U.S., the Biden's administration has put forth all of the necessary regulations to get this quantity of funding in place. So there are three main areas that we're looking at and others and organizations all over the U.S. are looking at. And one such group is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. You all have heard about that. That's $1.2 trillion just in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Another one is the Inflation Reduction Act. That's $437 billion. Another one, and the last one is the American Rescue Plan Act. That's $1.9 trillion in funding. That all of that funding has not been allocated. Some will be allocated on the federal level, and some will be allocated on the state level. I mentioned that there are 10 regions in the U.S. now that FEMA has organized, but funding on the federal level comes from Congress to FEMA, from FEMA down to the regions, and from the regions to the individual states that comprise those regions. We are operating, our group here, we are operating on the national level and the region level. There is somebody associated with Black Belt Wall Street in every region in this country. So therefore, we are operating in every region. And we're going to be mindful of what's taking place in the different regions. So we are not people who run after hand-me-downs or handouts. We're the kind of people that says, okay, let's be equitable in the distribution, especially since the Biden administration has taken the position of making sure through allocations that the underserved community receive some equity. Now, we used to be called minorities. Now we're being called underserved. But we can mobilize our resources, our individual resources, and that is showing up primarily. And we know how to go after the funding, but we need the backing of the community. We can't do it by ourselves. And so we simply want you all to participate at this level and continue to hang in there with what we are doing and bring some of your friends along. Let them know that we do have something good to say, and we want to say it to you every Wednesday night and all in between, because you know you can contact us any day of the week. Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz and myself, we and some of the other directors, we are available to you. So thank you very much. If I have no questions on what I just said, if you have any questions on what I just said, please do ask me those questions.
I had a question, Sister Aisha. The question was, you stated some different opportunities where there was some money. You said something about the Information and Jobs Act. I know I can go back over the tape and listen to it. Could you tell me what you said there again?
I said the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, that is called, that's the acronym, there is $1.2 trillion that has been allocated for just that, the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, okay? The infrastructure part will go primarily to the states, and I think that there's about 40% that of that total $1.2 trillion that the president can then allocate as far as the Jobs Act, roughly that. I also said that for the Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, there's $437 billion allocated for that act. And I also said for the American Rescue Plan Act, the ARPA, there's $1.9 trillion in funding allocated. Okay. And it has not all been spent. Now, some of these are over a period of 3 years. But, however, the funding will go to directly to the needs of communities and empower the communities to seek funding based on community-identified led projects. And we have plenty of those in our community. Community-identified and community-led projects. These are not my words. These are words taken directly from the Biden's administration statement, the Biden and Harris administration immediate priority statement. Okay. So I only want to say, in reference to natural disasters, we recognize that they are constantly increasing. We have Otis over in Mexico, and it really devastated Acapulco. And we having devastation all over the world. We also talked about last week how traumatic the mental illness that's taking place among our young people. And this has caused us a great deal of concern. We know that natural disasters such as hurricanes, tornadoes, severe weather conditions, floods, they are traumatic events for families to deal with. They are traumatic, especially our young people. Especially our young people are suffering. We know that fear and anxiety, which are the leading causes of psychosis, and during a natural disaster, the adults are afraid. The young people are afraid. The young people become very anxious. This causes psychosis. Psychosis, it becomes mass psychosis when you have large numbers who are people and young people who are experiencing these traumatic events. So that increases mental illness throughout the society. And we are seeing it within our young people. And it's really very sad and it's heartbreaking. And many other parents are not prepared to deal with this. They don't know how to deal with it. Public health agencies are not prepared. They don't have the staff to deal with the mental illnesses that our young people are suffering. So we have to speak on this, and we have to also let the community members know that these are our concerns also. Natural disaster not only destroys the families, it takes your lives, and it also takes your economic wealth. When you have your home totally destroyed, that could have been generational wealth that you were going to pass down to a family member. It completely wipes it out. And just like my dear friends down in that were devastated by Katrina, they are constantly talking to me and telling me that they, the adults and the older people, are suffering from extreme anxiety and depression. These people worked very hard for many, many years. They bought homes. Their homes were totally destroyed. They do not feel in their lifetime that they will be able to recover. So therefore, what they wanted to leave to their children as generational wealth is completely gone. And this is what we are faced with when there are mass catastrophes from climate change. We know that we are not in a position to stop climate change from taking place, but we certainly can show you how to prepare for the climate change, which will help you mitigate, lessen the impact of climate change on you and your family and your community. If you can mitigate, lessen the impact of climate change, you have a better chance of survival and bouncing back to some extent. So these are the things that we talk about in disaster preparedness training. And one more point on this. We now know that many of the disasters that have occurred, and I'm using Lahaina over in Maui, over on the Hawaiian Islands, as an example. The people, many of you saw on national television, the people running in the streets trying to get away from the fires. Well, I bet you didn't see the people have anything in their hands. They were just running. They had 20 minutes to evacuate, or they will be consumed by the fires and the heat. Now these same people are faced with the obstacle. They have no identification because they were not prepared. They had not had a class on disaster preparedness. They have no identification. They cannot prove that they lived in that neighborhood other than a neighbor saying, yes, I know them. But that's not enough proof for the federal agency, nor is it enough proof for some of the insurance groups that are beginning to walk away. And they are using that as an excuse to walk away. So when you are prepared for a natural disaster, when you get the first alert, when you hear the first alert, you pick up your emergency kit and you walk out the door with your family and get in the car and go. And these are the things that we talk about in disaster preparedness. So, once again, that's what we do, and we want to prepare as many people throughout America, especially in the underserved population, because 70 to 80% of African-American people in the United States are unprepared for a natural disaster. And this crossed all economic and education and age grouping. It doesn't matter how much education you have. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter your age. We are 70 to 80% prepared, unprepared for a natural disaster, which means only, what, 20 or 30% of us are partially prepared. So, folks, if we're talking about survival, we got to get busy, and we've got to contact Black Belt Wall Street and let them know that your organization wants to get prepared. And this is what we do. We take you through a training. And when you finish the training, your attitude, your whole personality changes because you feel empowered. You can't stop that storm, but you can certainly take your family out of harm's way. And that's very important. So we are taught every Wednesday night by the grace of God about preparedness. Let us know that you want your organization, 100 families at a time, in person or remote. We have to get started, and we have to get this done. So, Brother Bilal, are there any questions on preparedness or anything that I have said before?
Mics are open.
Brother Bilal.
Our mics are open, sister. Any questions? Anyone have a question? Our mics are open. We'd be glad to hear from you. Our mics are open.
Okay, Brother Bilal, we're looking forward to hearing what you have.
Okay, well, like I said, since our audience is more or less the listening audience, we got, like I said, folks from all over the world know about our programs. And, of course, it's very true in the Middle East. So an organization that's Keep Independent Media, talking about TV, radio, or channels of communications, and their organization is called Keep Independent Medias Alive. And they're from the Middle East, and they sent us this message on their living conditions over in Palestine as of today. They sent this information to us. I'll share it with you. And this should take us through the rest of our programs. So, brothers and sisters, I'll share our information from our friends overseas, what they have to say, and they're talking about a serious natural disaster.
How many kids will it take for you to have your humanity? 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, how many babies do you need to see dead and pulled out of rubble for you to have basic human empathy and dignity as a human being? How many kids?
Hello, everyone. I'm Rania Kalik, and this is Dispatches. Israel's genocide in Gaza has shocked the world with an endless flow of videos and images of Palestinian children cut into pieces by American bombs dropped by Israeli warplanes deliberately intended to destroy a civilian population. Israeli leaders have said as much. Despite the explicitly genocidal rhetoric of Israeli officials, Western leaders continue to proclaim their support for Israel's right to defend itself. Over 2,000 Palestinian children have been slaughtered in the merciless carpet bombing of what amounts to a ghetto. Yet we're told by the mainstream corporate media that it's their fault for resisting their extermination. It's their fault for hating Israel. It's their fault, we're even told, because actually, they bombed themselves. But this war on Gaza is different than past wars, not only in the scale of Israeli aggression, but in the reaction on the street, from the Middle East to the United States. While Western media runs cover for Israeli atrocities, people are losing their jobs across various industries for speaking out. The suppression has never been this intense. Yet still, Israel is losing the narrative war. Most people want to see a ceasefire, and tens of thousands have protested across the U.S. to demonstrate their opposition to Biden's unconditional support for this genocide. Joining me to discuss Israel's genocidal onslaught in Gaza and how it has the potential to snowball into a catastrophic regional war, I'm joined by journalist Abby Martin, creator and host of The Empire Files. Abby Martin, welcome, because obviously we're going to be talking about the horrific genocide that's taking place in Gaza. And I just want to clarify, we are recording this before there has been a ground invasion, but obviously every day, every hour, that could change. So if that has happened after this goes out, just keep that in mind as you watch this. But anyways, Abby, I guess, like, there's so much to discuss. You've done so much journalism on the issue of Palestine, you know, both on the ground and away. And I want to start off by asking you about your documentary, Gaza Frights for Freedom, which was released in 2019. And that was 4 years ago, and it's an excellent documentary for anybody who hasn't watched it. I encourage you to go check it out after you've watched this episode. I will include a link to it in the description. And it's still making a huge impact to help people understand the situation that Gaza is in, which has obviously gotten, like, significantly worse in the last 2 weeks. But can you maybe start out by telling our audience, what is Gaza Fights for Freedom about, and why does it still matter as we witness the atrocities being committed against Gaza right now?
Well, Rania, I think everyone has that light bulb moment. Like, mine was the Gaza Flotilla massacre in 2010 when Israeli commandos, you know, jumped on a ship in international waters and just executed, I think, like 9 peace activists, 1 American citizen. And then, of course, the fog of war coming out of that attack was literally apologizing and whitewashing this massacre. And I think that that really woke me up to, wow, something is very, very wrong with what we're being told with this so-called Israel-Palestine conflict. And then, you know, everything compounded as I started working with Palestinians, and every time Israel would go on one of their bombardments of Gaza every couple of years, bombing people in essentially a caged area, my friends and colleagues that were Palestinian had to check in every couple hours to see if their families were dead or alive. And it was just so harrowing and so horrifying. Fast forward to the Great March of Return. This was, I think, when Mike and I went to the occupied West Bank in 2017. This was a year before Palestinians in Gaza decided to do this mass civil disobedience action, where for 18 months they were going out every single Friday, tens of thousands at the beginning, and then it kind of whittled down into just thousands of people. I mean, this was a consistent, determined action, completely unarmed. Men, women, children, medics, journalists, all of these people went out. It was in no way directed or engineered by Hamas, this cartoonish depiction of Hamas, you know, stage managing everything in Gaza and taking away Palestinians' agency. It was devised by a poet named Ahmed Artema, who just simply wanted to kind of do this peaceful action where he was drawing attention to their plight as refugees. And it was mostly symbolic to erect tents and basically call attention to their plight as refugees and show the international community, look, you know, we're still here generations later as besieged refugees, ethnically cleansed right from, you know, this partition where our ancestral lands are just right there. We can see them, that we can't go to them. And I think we know what happened, Rania, is that Israeli snipers perched up on hilltops just took everyone out, looking at people, civilians, through their scopes, their sniper scopes, and took out journalists, medics, children, disabled people. These are all egregious war crimes under the Geneva Conventions in a standing army, like between armies. An armed battle. It's still egregious war crimes to target those protected groups. So the fact that there were no militants shooting at Israeli soldiers, it was just simply civilians en masse, and Israeli snipers still picked them off one by one. Every couple hours you would hear the shot ring out and people would just drop dead or drop injured and wounded and be brought back through the ambulances, and then, of course, they would target the ambulances. And when this happened, I just thought, there's nothing that's going to be more egregious than this, right? I mean, Israel is committing such heinous war crimes for all the world to see, and there's no argument. There's no argument that they could give. There's no fog of war. There's no flipping the script here. Like, that's why we wanted to work with Palestinian journalists to tell this story, because I just thought, look, this is such a clear-cut case of Israeli war crimes. It's incontrovertible. It's super proven. We base the entire framework of the movie around this UN report that was released. Everything's documented. But, Rania, it just didn't matter. And now, you know, 2023, that was 4 years ago, as you mentioned, Israel's taking out as many people as they killed in the Great March of Return in, like, every couple hours. I can't keep up with the amount of civilians that are dying in mass, because in the Great March of Return, it was 214 people that were picked off by Israeli snipers, 8,000 people shot with live ammunition. And now every couple hours I'm hearing that hundreds of people, you know, are dying every couple hours. And it's just like, you think that it can't get worse, and it just does. And they made the Great March of Return about Israel, and they made it about the human shields, and they continued to pose as the victim even during that. And international law did nothing, and the UN sat back and did nothing, and the US continued to greenlight Israeli apartheid. And so the audacity, the hubris, and the arrogance of thinking that you can keep 2.3 million people in this caged ghetto and not expect anything to happen. And so that's led us to where we are today. And even in the movie, it said that, you know, by 2020, the UN was saying this is an uninhabitable area. The lack of potable water, I mean, all of those things. So that was 4 years ago, and it was already 50% of all diseases were because of toxic water. I mean, how is this sustainable?
I mean, obviously it's not, and now Gaza's dealing with a situation where it's just being completely leveled. You have Israeli leaders essentially saying we want to turn it into a parking lot, and I honestly at this point it's like you have no words anymore. Because just watching image after image, I'm just not sure, like, what is the world's threshold for videos of Palestinian children in Gaza being chopped into pieces by American bombs delivered by Israeli jets? Like, obviously, over 2,000, and that's probably an underestimate, because, like right now they're talking about hospitals shutting down. They've run out of fuel. I mean, you think about, like, the babies and incubators lie that the U.S. spread in the lead-up to the first Gulf War in Congress, that famous lie. In this case, it's not a lie. Actually, babies and incubators in Gaza are very likely right now dying because Israel is denying fuel to hospitals, and I just don't understand how anyone can see images of children, I don't care who they are, just any children, being chopped up into pieces and dying needlessly, being murdered, and call that self-defense or standing by a civilized country or any of the insane rhetoric we've heard. I'm sorry, I'm going to probably get a little angry throughout this because this is really outrageous. But, you know, speaking to that, you know, I've seen you posting messages from your contacts in Gaza where the situation just sounds completely apocalyptic. I actually just saw before we started recording that the Al Jazeera Arabic correspondent, who is right now in Ramallah, just got news that his family, his, like, wife and daughter and brother, I mean, I think it was his brother, but basically his whole family was killed in an Israeli airstrike. By the way, on the south, in Khan Yunis, in the south where they were told to evacuate to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Everybody from Gaza has family being killed. I'm curious, what are you hearing from those you know on the ground in Gaza?
Well, so all the people that I'm in contact with were people that we did the documentary with, and so it's been an apocalyptic nightmare unfolding for the last 4 years, and to see my friends and colleagues who want to remain anonymous because we already have seen 20 journalists be killed. You could argue whether they were targeted or not. We know Shireen Abu Akleh certainly was, and we know that the journalists during the Great March of Return certainly were. So regardless, there is no, like, accountability for all of these journalists who are losing their lives during this onslaught. And so my colleagues do not want to be targeted. And so that's why I'm, you know, not naming them. But one of them, who was our field producer through the entire movie, has been rendered homeless by Israeli bombs. He's been displaced 3 times. Then he moved into his parents' home, and then that's when they got the mass leaflets being dropped saying everyone needs to leave to the south. And so they just aimlessly were fleeing to the south as bombs were dropping. We know that Israel was bombing these aid convoys that they then later claimed that Islamic Jihad booby-trapped the aid convoy of people fleeing. Absolutely barbaric, genocidal stuff. Rania, my other colleague who's there, he woke up this morning to the news that his brother had been martyred. His brother living in a house with 30 people. And I want to just read you,
please.
I want to read you what he said. And it's sick. This is where they're at right now. He said, my brother was martyred in a bombing of his friend's house, and 30 people were killed, as usual, mostly women and children. My brother left behind his wife and two children, the youngest of whom is 4 months old. We're in a state of intense sadness and fear every moment that we will lose another person. He was like, some people in other countries differ in opinion about whether they're going to eat today or have a break. He was like, the ordeals that we're dealing with is if a bomb hits us, there's no doubt that it will destroy all of us. He was like, so we're trying to grapple with, do we stay together or do we separate so we don't all die together? I mean, it's insane that 40 miles away from this genocide taking place that you have Israelis going to the beach, going out to eat, just living their lives, Rania, and you have our friends and brothers and sisters on the ground in Gaza deciding, hey, should we stick together so that if a bomb hits the house, we'll all die together, or should we separate so that one of us will live on and perhaps tell our stories and take care of our infants who won't have a family anymore? I mean, just wrap your mind around how the decisions that are being made by people there. And this isn't even to mention the fact that food and water and electricity have been cut off. You know, because they're subhuman, they're animals, in the words of these Israeli ministers, and the U.S. doesn't care, right? Liberals don't care about this. Sarah Silverman was saying, hey, we're at the point that why do these animals deserve water and electricity? So waterborne illnesses, foodborne illnesses, all of these things are happening aside from that. You mentioned babies. I keep thinking of formula. Babies screaming, starving to death. Not even the ones being bombed and beheaded with bombs. The ones who can't eat, the people on dialysis. I mean, there's no time to even talk about those victims, and there's no time to grieve the death and destruction that's happening aside from the heavy bombardment of Israeli bombs. And to hear every day from my – it's like I don't even know what to say other than I will do my best to, like, share this information and hope that it will help humanize the plight of what is going on, Rania.
And that is – just when you put it like that, it's so insane to think about on top of everything you just described. There's this, like, worldwide gaslighting going on where it's your fault. You're bombing yourselves. You're basically all human shields for a terrorist organization that is the same as ISIS. It's your fault. You hate Israel. You're anti-Semites. You deserve this. And just by world leaders. And, I mean, the reason I raise this, of course, is because, you know, you've been covering the issue of Palestine through your journalistic career. And I, as all, I, you know, I think all of us who've been following this issue recognize there are the same Israeli talking points every single time, like a broken record. And they're all repeated ad nauseum by CNN, by MSNBC, by BBC, by all the mainstream Western channels. So I want to ask you to help our audience debunk some of these talking points. One in particular that I think is very insidious is that you hear the Israelis and Biden and Anthony Blinken and Ursula von der Leyen keep repeating every 5 minutes in tweets, because they just have to remind us, like, every 5 minutes that they support this genocide and they stand with Israel. And never to justify it, they keep repeating that Hamas is using Hamas, they say Hamas doesn't represent Palestinians or their aspirations. In fact, Hamas is using them as human shields, and that's why Palestinians are dying. Therefore, Hamas is actually responsible for all the dead children that Israel is killing. And you've done, I think, a great job basically debunking this entire claim. So how should people, how do you, at least, let's ask you that, how do you respond to that claim as Israel inflicts its most vicious acts of violence against Gaza's civilian population? How do you respond to the claim that Hamas is using Palestinians across Gaza as human shields?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, because, and I want to go back to the Hamas equals ISIS. Well, in fact, they were saying Hamas is worse than ISIS, because they started off with that, and that's why I think they wanted to just unload, like, aerial bombardment. It's similarly to what the U.S. and Russia did with ISIS and, you know, Syria and Iraq, and that was, you know, we know that those airstrikes were taking out hundreds of civilians at a time, and there was kind of like this.
By the way, real quick, I just want to say it actually, like, mainstream American media has reported that Israel has dropped more bombs. By the sixth day of this, Israel had dropped more bombs than the U.S. had in, like, a month of carpet bombing Raqqa. I just want to throw that in there.
That's crazy, because we saw the aftermath of the Raqqa bombing. I mean, it was, like, leveled. And there were hundreds of civilians that died, and it was kind of secondary to think of all the civilian casualties, because ISIS was, like, so barbaric and so subhuman that, well, we just needed to do everything we could to take out ISIS. And that's what they wanted to cement in the first place. But then I think people were seeing the horrors unfolding on the ground and Palestinians dictating their own reality through social media, and so it switched back to the old, tired human shield talking point, which, aside from just, like, picking apart that narrative, I mean, if you look at, like, the swath of the history of propaganda used toward American allies, and I'm sorry, from American allies toward our so-called enemies back all the way from World War II and beyond, and Vietnam and Korea and Iraq and Libya, you can see that tired talking point being propelled by the mainstream media, whether it's the Viet Cong, whether it's Gaddafi's, you know, civilians, whether it's Iraqi civilians, it's always they're going to use human shields. Like, basically anticipating there's going to be a large amount of civilian casualties, but they're all human shields for these crazy dictators or for these crazy genocidal maniacs. And so just know that it doesn't matter, you know, because they're the ones putting their civilians at risk. And so it's always been a racist, dehumanizing trope and a veil, like basically a veil to commit mass death and destruction. And it's sick. And for some reason, it just sticks with Palestinians. Palestinians are continued to be called mindless human shields. Their agency is completely taken away. And they're all just looked at as some sort of death cult who martyrs their own children. It is disgusting and it's sick. And let's look at the propaganda, because Israel is basically saying everyone in the Gaza Strip is a human shield for Hamas because they elected Hamas in 2006. Well, they can't leave. So first and foremost, it's a situation of Israel's own creation, even if that were true. They are not allowing civilians to flee. It's the only place in the world that refugees can't even leave by boat if they wanted to. They're shot in the waters if they stray too far. They can't go into Rafah. They can't go into the Erez crossing because Israeli snipers will shoot to kill. There's like literally a no-go zone surrounding their entire partitioned land. So it's crazy that Israel's like pretending that this is true when they've created the situation. So putting that aside, their actual evidence that they always put forward are literal cartoon infographics. They either release like images of aerial like infographics of Gaza with like red squares around them, and they're just like, here's a rocket launcher. See, and it's right next to this UN building, so naturally we have to blow up the shelter, right? Because this rocket launcher is over a couple streets away. And it's just always this red square on like an aerial shot of the street. It's like, okay, great, I'll take your word for it. And then aside from that, they literally use infographics. I'll never forget during the Sheikh Jarrah, horrible like ethnic cleansing going on in Sheikh Jarrah and the pogroms that were going on, and also during the Great March of Return, they were releasing infographics of just cartoon images of people standing on rooftops holding missiles and grenade launchers. And it's like, okay, do you think that that's convincing anyone? And then the argument completely falls apart when you look at the Great March of Return, because they were using that argument to justify shooting elderly people and disabled people and children and medics and journalists, and that's outrageously false. They were not human shields for anyone. There were no militants there. And so when you apply that logic just to that instance alone, Rania, the argument falls apart and their credibility is completely shot. And so we can't trust anything that they say. Everything Israel uses for their playbook has been debunked. And then if you apply the same logic to Israel, well, they're using human shields too. They have military bases in the middle of residential neighborhoods. They broadcast from densely populated areas? If Hamas targeted one of their military bases or one of their media towers, is there any doubt that that would be called a war crime? No. The standard of international law should be applied the same. That's the whole point. There should be no bias at all. You should look at the facts and let the facts, go where they are. And unfortunately, there's a complete, not only reversal of the truth, but just a misapplied version of international law that somehow only applies to who Israel deems its enemies. And I'm sick of this whole Hamas-run, Hamas-led-like narrative in the corporate media, too, as if that, again, takes away, strips Palestinian agency and pretends like Hamas has a gun to the head of Palestinians who are, like, lying about their situation or about the horrors unfolding on the ground. And it immediately makes people think that they can't trust the news coming out of, like, the Hamas-run health ministry about civilians dead or the Al-Arab hospital bombing. And it's just grotesque. And so what Israel purposely tries to do with the human shield thing and beyond is just create this fog of war, and what they're best at is deflecting and projecting what they do onto Palestinians. And like you said, Palestinians bomb their own hospital, Rania. What idiots, you know? Just like Joe Biden said, Hamas got to learn to shoot straight.
I just can't. I mean, wow. I don't even know what to – that guy, he needs to be prosecuted. I don't even know, like, what to do – about Joe Biden and the fact that he can't speak, and then when he does, he says things like that.
It's beyond comprehension. Our president.
Our reality
yeah.
is beyond comprehension. Right? And, you know, when it comes to the issue of international law, one thing I will say is, like, at this point, I just can't get over people being like, Israel has to conduct its war in the confines of international law. That's the most you'll hear. It's like, just please carry out your genocide a little bit more politely. I'm not really sure how many more Israeli leaders have to go on international television and state explicitly that they are, in fact, deliberately targeting civilians because they don't see Palestinians as human or civilians. They see them all as Hamas animals. They've, like, repeatedly said that over and over again, yet still we're sitting here pretending like Israel will ever care about anything related to an international law system that, quite frankly, was created by America, by the Western countries, only to be applied when it's useful against their adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
That is all.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, you know, I think that one important, I mean, there's so many things happening outside of Gaza, related to Gaza, that aren't getting attention because obviously the worst atrocities of this genocide are taking place in Gaza, and it kind of overshadows everything else. But I just want to move for a moment to the West Bank, which hasn't been in the news as much as Gaza, but, you know, Israelis are committing violence there as well, almost, if not more at this point. I mean, as of the last number I saw, it was like 95, but I'm sure that has already increased. So let's just go with somewhere around 100 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th by either the Israeli military or actual lynchings by Israeli settlers, which have not received attention. And some of these settlers have actually recently been given assault rifles by the National Security Minister, this crazy right-wing guy, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who bought 10,000 assault rifles to distribute to settlers, what they call civil defense groups, but they're just like far-right vigilante groups, to be used against Palestinians. You have reported from the ground in the West Bank. Can you tell us some of your reflections from that experience and then what is going through your head as you kind of like catch up on the news of what's happening there today?
I mean, it's so scary because there's massacres happening every day there, like you mentioned, and everything that precipitated the attack on October 7th was like bloodletting going on, an increase in settler terrorism, this complete, fascist coalition of actual like terrorists, like actual terrorists and fascists. That have either been, like, convicted for, like, heinous crimes against Palestinians or just openly genocidal, like, stacked in the government, like Likudniks and, you know, like Naftali Bennett. You mentioned earlier this rhetoric coming out from the Israeli government being purely genocidal. I mean, this is the guy who said that they're committing self-genocide.
Here's what they're doing. Hamas is conducting massive self-genocide. They're taking women and children, placing them next to missile launchers, and shooting the missiles at Israel.
But these kids apparently were playing on a beach.
I'm telling you where we
This guy is a maniac. Netanyahu is saying that they want telegenically dead babies for their cause. This is the kind of rhetoric, and Western media just sits back and they're like, wow, that's so fascinating. Oh, my God, tell me more. Like, have you ever heard something so cartoonish that they're committing self-genocide? But, yeah, I mean, this guy, this harrowing footage of this guy handing out assault rifles, like some assembly line to all of these fanatical settlers, and they claim, oh, Palestinians are given money to go kill Jewish people. No, dude, this is, again, it's like projection for what they're doing. They're literally getting rallied on. Like, officially, the army is told, like, go just kill Palestinians. Like, these settlers, it's like, just go take them out, because there's this, basically, not only a fog of war going on in Gaza with all of this Hasbro propaganda being unleashed, but it's also like creating this fog of war about what's going on in the West Bank. There's essentially just like a cloak, like no one's looking over here, so now we can really ramp up our pogroms, the assaults on villages, the settler terrorism. They're going balls to the wall. There was just 13 people like killed in one village. From probably soldiers and settlers, because we know that soldiers basically just protect the fanatical settlers. You go over there with a tractor trailer, you perch up on top of an Arab village, and you just get immediately, like, electricity and water hookups by the Israeli military and protected. And that was my biggest takeaway. I think that stark contrast is just really what people need to know when they think about the West Bank. The West Bank is under a military occupation. It's essentially martial law. And fanatical settlers from all over the world can just go perch up on top of Arab villagers and be armed to the teeth and be protected. And Palestinians not only can't have weapons, they can't have anything construed as a weapon. I remember I was in a car going through a checkpoint of a bunch of Palestinian guys, and they had all been, of course, everyone's like in and out of prison for just arbitrary nonsense. And I had a nail file in my purse, and the guy was just like, I could go back to prison. If they find this nail file and that can be construed as a weapon, I will go to prison. And I was just like, what?
What?
Yeah. So this is, I mean, when we were there for a month, and every day it was just countless stories of Palestinians being executed for this reason or that. Like some farmer was shot in the back because he didn't turn around quickly enough at an Israeli soldier saying, giving him a demand. We go to the guy's funeral later, and everyone is, you know, traumatized. It was this horrifying thing. As we're leaving, the Israeli soldiers set up this huge blockade around the house and rerouted everyone to drive like an hour, which was really just what would take you 5 minutes in a car, just to inconvenience everyone. And
brothers and sisters, those are some of the tragedies that continue to exist. We're at the point of where we're about to close out, but we thank you for being for listening, and like you said, we are going to continue to pray and continue to grow. But if anything knows about the devastation and can be have a deep sympathy for the devastation that's going on over in Palestine, it's African Americans. Because when it comes right to it, we are the Palestinians. So thanks so much for your attention. And we will be back with you again next week.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin?
people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?